Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. Hi, I'm Trent, and it's great to have you company today for episode 45. This week on Toy Power, we're going to hit up the latest news, and then we're going to get into potentially a fairly divisive topic, which is a Justice League movie review. So we'll see how we found that one. Going around the room, I've got with me today Frank.
Hello.
Darren.
Hello, everyone.
And Ben.
G'day, g'day.
And I think we're going to kick off with the latest news.
Oh, that would be really good if I'd queued up all the sounds to actually go with it. Yeah, that'll do.
Latest news.
Coming at you.
Done for a live studio audience.
cue the applause.
What we've got today, we want to have a bit of a chat about, firstly, Amazon. Amazon launched in Australia. So this is sort of, well, should have been, I guess, some big news. And it launched on the 5th of December. How did people find the launch?
It didn't launch.
Was it just like a... had a lot of media coverage.
Wonk, 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 wonk.
Ben's got all the sound effects today. I'm just going to close the laptop, hey?
I'm that guy from Police Academy, right? So to all our overseas listeners and everyone else that doesn't listen to in Australia and not all around the hype of the Amazon in Australia, so they were due to launch on the 5th of December, as Trent alluded to, but I think about a week later their actual site became live. They had enormous problems with uploading. Apparently, those that could actually get into the site between the 5th and a week later, you couldn't add anything to your cart or anything. You could just look, but not really touch, so to speak. So, window shopping.
So a bit like the regular Amazon for Australians.
Ooh, yeah. And have we got to call out? The other thing is the prices on there are redonkulous. We're talking your regular Transformers figure that you can buy at any local store for about $20, $25. Amazon have got it for about $50. So
yeah. I noticed that one thing I saw some people, and I looked at it myself, is it seemed to be a lot of like marketplace type stuff, and I don't know a lot about Amazon, but it wasn't actually coming, the products you were looking at weren't coming from Amazon, they were other sellers, and so they were putting their own price and obviously markup on top of that.
It's like an eBay, and I noticed that. I used Amazon a lot in the very early days to get books, predominantly that are action figure type books that I couldn't get in Australia, and I was on there one day and I'm, wow, they've got really cool action figures. I didn't know Amazon stocked all this sort of stuff. And then I realized that it wasn't actually Amazon stocked, it was the reseller like an eBay.
So hopefully this opens up to as a gateway, because obviously Amazon being the mother hub in America, hopefully this opens up for a lot more items to be shipped over here in Australia that otherwise have got a bit of a block on them, and we can't order them from here in Oz. So hopefully they can piggyback or whatever.
We're certainly hoping for that. It's funny, a lot of the media attention and news has been focused on the fact that they'll be selling toys here so much cheaper than what you can get in like a retail. And obviously, we were all excitedly looking forward to that. And then it went live and, it was an absolute flop, as others have said. The thing I was really hoping for is that we start seeing some of those Amazon exclusive figures made available to us. And it's still really early days yet, so I don't want to sound like I've given up on Amazon or sound too negative. It is early days. It just launched. There is time for that sort of stuff to filter through.
I definitely think that's an important thing to shout out, that it is early days, that Rome wasn't built in a day, neither was Amazon, so let's hope that we can see some future awesome products at decent prices in a year or so once they've got their groundwork sorted.
Absolutely.
Some not so good news now. We'll go through a few of the cancellations that we've had. If we think to DC Collectibles, they had a number of figures and vehicles announced, including the Joker-mobile from the BTAS line. That's been cancelled. So that's gone. That sort of hit about a month back. It looked like Diamond was showing it up as cancelled, and then DC Collectibles confirmed that a couple of weeks ago. Also, the Bombshells line. This is the action figure, the sort of 6.5-inch highly articulated action figure line based on the sculptures, which spawned, I guess, an action figure line. It spawned comics. They've cancelled Bumblebee as well as Supergirl, which is really, really unfortunate. I mean, I was so surprised that Supergirl can't get a figure out. They're not saying they're cancelling the line. It's just those two particular figures.
As far as the Bombshells go, she was one of the later introductions, like from the comic series and stuff. It was always Batgirl, Harley, Poison Ivy. And then as far as the comics go, anyway, she was introduced sort of, if it was a TV show, she would have been a mid-season edition type thing.
Right.
So I do understand it, but it still sucks.
I think I remember, because I collect that statue line,
and
she was one of the very early statues. I reckon almost number three or four in the statue line.
Oh, okay.
So, which all right. might have been different, obviously, in the comics. Mm. But
it shocks me that such a household name right now, with a character with a self-titled television series, can't...
Yeah, that's fair.
...can't garner a release. I'd like to hear what Frank's saying around the source material of this particular incarnation, but this is a character that you'd think...
It's got more exposure than some of the others right
exactly.
now. Yeah,
you know, it's Supergirl. Can't tell me there aren't fans that would buy it.
Mm.
More cancellation news now. Oz Comic Con. So this is a sort of pop culture and comic con convention that occurs in Australia. Part of it has been cancelled. So unfortunately for us living here in Adelaide, the Adelaide leg has been cancelled, as well as our friends over the Nullarbor in Perth. Mm. They've dropped it from the 2018 schedule.
Yep.
What did we think of this? I know Breaking the Panel broke this before us, so here's the US show breaking it before the Australians. But what are our thoughts, just quickly going around the room on this?
Personally, I'm absolutely devastated. I don't have the opportunities right now in my personal life to get interstate or overseas to cons like I'd like to, and they really mean a lot to me, them coming to Adelaide, and I'd like to see them do well and grow and become bigger and better. So for me, this is a really big personal blow, but I also think it's a personal blow for Oz Comic Con. What a lot of people may not realise is they launched in 2012, 1 year after Armageddon came in 2011 for 1 year, and 1 year only, and then never came back. Yep. And they launched in 2012, and what a lot of people wouldn't realise is that Adelaide was actually their first city. They came to Adelaide before, did the Adelaide and Perth shows back-to-back before they went to the eastern states, you know, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, etc. We're the inaugural con, if you will, and I just think it's really sad. Here we are, Adelaide's been cancelled. To me, I know there'd be business decisions that would be, or business factors that would be impacting on it, but I just think it's sad that something couldn't be worked out. On the flip side of that, Supernova have the other comic con / pop culture event that have committed to 2018, and they'll be back in early November next year, so which is terrific news. They just recently came to Adelaide and brought Stan Lee, among others, with them.
Mm. Just one thing on that, the head of the OzCon, it's the way he wrote it. It's like, we can't give you the con that you deserve, so we're cancelling it. Well,
is not the hero you deserve.
It's just stupid. Like, yeah, I just don't think the wording was very right, and I think that has sparked more anger about the issue itself than, just cancelling the loan. So
I think you're right. It sounds completely disingenuous and disrespectful.
Yeah. Well, in the end, it basically comes down to, it must have come down to dollars, really.
Obviously.
I guess from my point of view, and I'm going to talk about my experience of going to that as well as compared to AvCon, which is the other big one, which incidentally started in Adelaide. I don't think AvCon actually goes interstate. It is just Adelaide. Okay. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, AvCon is the anime and video game convention.
Yeah.
And that's been around for a long time, since the early 2000s.
Yeah, exactly. It started at Adelaide University.
Yeah, I actually know, I sort of indirectly know one of the guys who was responsible for creating it, a friend of mine, one of my groomsmen at my wedding. He went to school with the guy who created it, Jared something, I forget his name. Give us a shout out if you're listening, Jared.
Come on the show if you're listening.
Yeah. I've been to a couple of Avcons, one with my Leonardo costume, which was my first one, and one heck of an experience wearing that. And then I think later that year or the following year went to OzCon. For my money, OzCon seemed to be more focused on the special guests and the people they could get. And don't get me wrong, they got some amazing names, Nathan Fillion and these sort of people. But I think that was too much of a focus. If you weren't willing to shell out the big dollars to get an autograph and a picture and all this and wait in line for half the day, I didn't feel, as a patron, there was a lot much else going on.
Yeah.
Whereas Avcon, you don't even need to be into anime and video games. I just felt like there was a lot more happening on the floor.
There probably was a lot more. They've branched out a lot
away
from anime and video games as well now. And,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of...
It's even though in the name it specifies anime and video games, I felt like it's broadened its horizons. Yeah. So am I sad? Yes, because nobody likes to lose something that was here. But yeah, I guess from my point of view, I go, well, I can't say I'm super surprised.
Yeah, well, Darren touched on it. So if you think about the landscape in Adelaide, we've got, or we used to have, talked about Armageddon. We got that once and then that was it. But we've got, or we've had in the past, Supernova and Oz Comic Con, as well as Avcon. Right now, for me, Armageddon, Supernova and Oz Comic Con, they're all cookie cutter events, right? Mm. I literally cannot tell if I'm in Oz Comic Con or Supernova or Armageddon.
Ask me which one's this.
Where am I? What am I doing? What am I here? Because, exactly. And that's no disrespect to the conventions, but they're all in the same place. They all utilize the same halls. They all utilize the same format. For the most part, the vendors seem the same. There might be some slight distinctions of who's there or who's not there, depending on that. But really, when you think about these cons, what they are is they're a couple of rooms. One room is set up with vendors and an artist alley, so you can sort of meet some local artists. Mm. You can buy products. You've then got different sections that are set up to have panels, so you get different, I guess, guests. And I couldn't tell you when I've seen Nathan Fillion. You know, I saw Nathan Fillion, brilliant. I couldn't tell you which event I saw him at because it's just, to me, the same sort of thing. So if we'd lost something, to me now, and with my timing, I could probably only ever get to one of these a year.
Mm.
So I'm still going to get to one. And I'm hoping the one that I get to is bigger and better because they're not competing.
Yep.
But that's sort of the loss for me is not as big because I feel like we've still got an event that's essentially identical to the one
same
we've lost.
Thing. Yep.
And maybe the guests that would have come to the Oz Comic Con will now schedule in with Supernova. Mm. So maybe you'll get all the guests sort of anyway that you would have got, and maybe get a higher caliber of guests.
One can only hope. So just on that, Supernova actually did post in response to that they were one convention away from cancelling Adelaide as well. Just attendance wasn't there, but they've come up with what they think is a formula of the right kind of guests that bring people, bring attendees to the event to sort of keep going with it. So I guess, you know, from my perspective, you know, obviously I hope that continues, people keep supporting it, like, you know, and the event keeps coming here, but, you know, it also paints a picture that they were, you know, perhaps incredibly determined to try and make Adelaide work.
Mm.
Yep. Okay, we'll move on to... Oh, sorry.
Ben. Sorry, I've got some breaking news here. So, wow. Okay, I've got no song for it. So this is from CNBC. Breaking: Walt Disney Co. and 21st Century Fox close in on deal that could come as soon as next week. Enterprise value for 21st Century Fox assets seen above $60 billion.
Yeah.
So I just want to break that down a little bit. So what you are saying is Century Fox is now Disney, which means the Alien franchise is now Disney, which means Xenomorphs being born from the Xenomorph Queen are now Disney princesses. Watch your local Barbie toy aisles for the Alien Queen.
Wow. Nice.
So now I have a Disney princess on my back, a tattoo. So
you're in the club.
Yeah.
Join the club. Yeah, in you go.
Yeah, you're in there amongst Kylo Ren and Disney princess.
Well, that is big news. I know that deal is, and when we talk about Fox, we're talking about the entertainment side of Fox. It's not the sports and news side of Fox. $60 billion. You know, a lot of people excited, I guess, in the pop culture arena around the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, potentially, when we think about where Marvel is at with their cinematic universe, and with Infinity War, that what that will mean for the franchise, and I guess moving into the next phase. A lot of those actors will come off the contracts. We'll see, I guess, a new phase. So that would be great news to have X-Men, and how does Fantastic Four fit into that?
Fantastic Four is owned by Fox.
That would
Deadpool
be
as well.
Yeah, Deadpool's a bit of an odd one, because you then wonder, and I know I saw a tweet from Ryan Reynolds about what does this mean for the tone of the film?
Correct, yeah.
So the R rating, I guess, comes into question. But what is... There's some other precedents for Disney going with the R. Is that right?
The Netflix stuff. Yeah. That was in... However, that what that was is that they don't own Netflix. They were basically licensing Punisher, Daredevil, and all those characters to Netflix. So, right, we're going to let you use the characters, go make something. Because as
then we pay you royalties.
Correct.
Yeah.
So then under this proposed deal, Disney would effectively own the Fox studio. So you're right. It does beg the question. I don't think what's going to happen is you're not going to have Fox, 20th Century Fox disappear altogether. I think if they're smart about it, they say, right, we're just going to keep that studio operating. And so they can put out a movie. Yes, the money ultimately comes from Mickey Mouse, but they can put out a Deadpool, an R-rated, whatever, under the Fox Studios banner, and the R rating is not attached to Disney directly.
Yep.
You know, you're not seeing the little Disney castle at the start of the film, and you can have your Logans, your Deadpools, and all these sorts of movies come out. Just interesting you said about the $60 billion. I've been seeing that story float around as well. To put that into context is how big a deal this is financially. All the Marvel movies, all the way from Iron Man to the latest one, combined, they have taken, in terms of the money they've made, is $13
billion. Oh, wow.
And so the actual acquisition of Fox is, what did we say, $60 million? Mm. $60 billion, sorry. Mm. It's a huge, huge deal.
What did Disney pay for Star Wars? Luke, for Star Wars?
Yeah. For LucasArts? I believe it was $4 billion, not just for Star Wars, but for Lucasfilm in its entirety.
$4
billion? That's what I believe. Yeah. I remember
it was a while ago.
Jackson said at the time, and it was quite controversial, that he thought that George Lucas had been underpaid. It was quite controversial because he was essentially attacking his employer.
Mm. Well, that's when we saw then George hanging out at the food court here in Adelaide. He was having a $10 sort of, was it? Food court meal and a Coke. Yeah. So, gee, he must have really suffered through that deal.
It's come on hard times.
Yeah. He was having that Diet Coke. You see that photo rounds every now and then on websites outside of Australia, and they don't even know it's an Australian photo. It's just a photo on file. It's great.
Southern Cross Food Court, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Where I go quite a bit, yeah.
But my perspective should be a little bit different to everyone else's. I do think this will have an impact on the kind of content that Disney will feel comfortable doing, and I'm going to back that up in a minute. I can remember saying to Frank just coincidentally about a year ago at Trent's Trade Day, when we were both talking about Logan, about how this was something that neither of us at the time thought Disney would have felt comfortable putting out there. But my reference point about how this will impact, I'm not saying this for R-rated movies won't happen, but there will be some content concerns. Disney have been very vocal about distancing themselves from the slave layer concept from Return of the Jedi, and not wanting to put out licensed memorabilia around that, and really trying to distance themselves from that part of Star Wars' past. And I know before she passed away, Carrie Fisher often would be she'd articulate
how much she hated it.
Well, she did, but she'd also articulate when people would say, things, a father, I think, tweeted her and said, how am I going to explain this to my son? This scene's just totally inappropriate. And she came back with, you explain it, I was kidnapped by a giant slug and I killed him. I think that's the point of view. Leia's, a pro-feminist character in that sense. She wasn't waiting for Luke or Han to rescue her. She saved herself. That aside, Disney have been quite vocal about their concerns around certain aspects of franchises they've acquired in the past. So does that mean Logan wouldn't have been made or wouldn't have been made in that form? Who knows? Does that mean there'll be some impact on the content of Deadpool 2? Probably still get an R rating. May not go quite as far as it would have previously, and I think there is a precedent for it, you know, Slave Light, Disney on the record as we don't like that aspect of the franchise.
All right. Well, keeping on movies, we might head into some trailers. We've got a few to talk about, so we'll try and keep them brief. But Infinity War dropped with a beautiful-looking trailer and Thanos getting out in his sort of tank top.
The memes around that have been hilarious. I've seen one where he's been done up as Hellboy, where he's got the big glove. There's him as Homer Simpson. There's him as... Bruce Willis.
My favourite's Rex Harrison from Pawn Stars. Yes. Where he's negotiating how much he's prepared to pay for
the Infinity. $50 for that.
What was the comparison? They had a close up of him and Joss Whedon.
I did see that one too.
Once it's been seen, it cannot be unseen. Similar they looked. but I guess it's getting a lot of parallels to Steppenwolf in Justice League. I guess just the CG of the visuals on Thanos.
I think the difference is that we all know what Josh Brolin looks like. The guy who plays Steppenwolf, I couldn't even tell you his name, let alone what he looked like. And from what I understand in Justice League, which we're going to talk about later on, he actually did the motion capture for Steppenwolf. But I think what Disney did, and they've got a set of precedents for this with other things, is that the face, even though it's clearly alien and purple and disfigured, it's Josh Brolin. You look at the face and go, I can see his face in it. A bit similar to what they did with Avatar.
You can see the actor underneath.
And so it lends to that additional realism because it's a recognisable face.
You're paying Josh Brolin enough to do the movie. You want to at least sort of get him in there.
You want to make sure that was actually him. Yeah.
That trailer looked amazing.
So good. I when it dropped, I must have watched it like 10 times that day. You know, it was effectively early in the morning Australian time when it sort of dropped overnight, and I've watched it before going to work, and then I've gotten in 10 minutes early to work and I've just watched it, you know, pausing at the right times. Oh, who's this, who's that? I think our friends at Breaking the Panel have obviously done a bit of it. Travis Jones with the Blazing Defender Report, he did a shot by shot breakdown, a 40-minute YouTube video for what is a 2-minute trailer, because there's that much content just sort of jammed into it. I was, you know, to me it was the music also, and there's all this stuff happening and there's a big fight going on, and then the music just sort of slows, almost stops, and then it's just the big Avengers crescendo that we've all heard for years, and the logo comes up.
Slightly off tune though when they get to the Avengers crescendo. It's sort of like a little bit distorted and
I can't say
leaves you on edge, like something's going to happen that's bad. That was a feeling I got from that part.
Interesting.
Of it.
And I'll go watch it for the 25th time then and find out.
Slightly a minor tone to one of the chords or something.
Yeah, maybe.
But very cool. I love the moment. I think you've got Thor at the end and he's like, who the hell are you guys? And you've got the Defenders there.
And that's the thing. You watch that trailer and you go, and you go, there's so many people in it. And then you go, I do feel like there's someone missing. And then Guardians right at the end. You're like, oh, that's right. Those guys as well. Like, interesting. What was the interesting people we didn't see? Captain Marvel, who is supposedly like Brie Larson, is going to be in that movie apparently, but also Hawkeye. Hawkeye has nowhere to be seen.
Interesting.
And he's been seen in a lot of promo shots. The Vanity Fair did a series of covers where they had all the people in their costumes, and he had a new look. He's got some sort of Justin Bieberish haircut and stuff, but not in the trailer at all. And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. How it all plays out. And we get the movie earlier than our friends over in America as well. They're all talking about May, and we're just going, what? Like, it's April over here, man. Like, sucked in.
I wonder if there'll be any American stuff going to play.
The other one that dropped, we've got a couple more to talk about, but I think, Ben, you might have shot something around on the Japanese anime-inspired Batman Samurai trailer.
Yep.
It's done by the guy that did Afro Samurai.
Is that right? Yep. So I'm a big fan of Ninja Scroll and you know, Ghost in the Shell and all that. So to see this, it's just right up my alley. And it's familiar enough that you know who the characters are, but they've got that real Japanese edge look on their faces and things. And I think this is going to be a real fun ride. So bring it. And do we have a release date? Does anyone know that?
I didn't see that part.
Next year, I think.
Right, cool. Bring it on.
Yeah, it looked sort of, it was very centric around Batman and the Joker. But then in the clips, you'd see, like, you know, one of the other sort of Ronins or samurais was Robin.
Yeah.
You know, but he had the sort of tuft of hair at the top, looking very, you know, Japanese inspired. And then you'd see little clips where it almost looked like Clayface might have been in there, and there was Harley and Catwoman. So it's going to really bring in the whole roster.
Yeah.
But in that sort of, I guess, what is it, 15th century
samurai feudal Japan, yeah, sort of Japan stuff. Yeah.
To me, it looked clearly anime, but I think when you look closely, it's almost a 3D render made to look 2D. I don't know if anyone else sort of picked up on how they've done it, but it looked beautiful anyway. I mean, the action sequences just look really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Just to also shout out, Figma and SH Figarts are both doing figures on these. So I think we saw the Figma, just the sort of black and white, unpainted prototype sculpt, looked highly articulated. So stay tuned. I guess we'll see a lot
in that. They make that good stuff.
Yeah. And the final trailer that we saw that dropped was Jurassic World. So how do we think this is going to end if they go back to...
I don't think it's going to end well. Yeah. It's going to end with dinosaurs eating people, let's be honest. interesting. I'm not a huge dino fan myself in terms of the movies. Jurassic World was okay for what it was. So it'd be interesting to see how they do it second time around. But, I think the coolest part in the trailer was you get to see... Blue, the Velociraptor that sort of forms a bond with Chris Pratt in the first one, and you get to see him as a little baby-sized dino, and I'm sure there'll be a bit of, you know, backstory and exposition around that. So, yeah, looking forward to it. Chris Pratt, you could watch Chris Pratt talking to a white wall and it'd be entertaining. Like, yep, I'm in.
Yeah, for sure. Just call out a bit of stuff in terms of hot toys now. We'll go into a couple of the toy-related news. Finally getting some love for the Matrix. So 1/6 scale Hot Toys, we saw a Neo and an Agent Smith figure revealed. And I think it's about time that we got some high quality Matrix figures. If you think back...
McFarlane?
Well, yeah, McFarlane did it. But before that, you had another company, and it's escaping me. But the first wave of figures was done by a... it's gonna bug me, but a company that went out of business shortly after.
Okay.
N2 Toys, I believe. Toys.
Okay.
And then McFarlane picked up the license, and I think around the time of Reloaded, and we saw some figures come out from McFarlane, which were very nice, but they were in that pre-posed, you know, not really an action figure. Yeah, you can't do a lot with them. More like a mini statue. So they were really nice. I collected both the N2 toys and the McFarlane stuff, and there's a from the Merovingian's house in Reloaded, there's the scene where basically Neo kicks one of the Merovingian's bodyguards into the statue, and it sort of explodes on the staircase, and I've got the McFarlane version of that, and it's immaculate the way they've replicated the diorama, and they've got the weapons, and the actual statue explodes. So we saw a bit of stuff from McFarlane, which was nice, but beyond that, it really hasn't had a lot of love. So really happy to see.
It's interesting. There's rumors that they're looking to reboot and get another another movie series started. So the timing seems a little coincidental, but I guess we'll find out.
It could be more to that than meets the eye. Very good. Boss Fight Studios. So anyone see the pictures of the Storm Toad Trooper come out? Looks very nice.
Just some teasers.
Yeah, they've revealed, I think, alternate heads, how that sort of works. So looking very nice there. Comes off the back of Wave 1, the Bucky and Jenny figures shipping now. I've received mine. So
is that Toad and Jedi Duck?
Yeah, I think what you've got is Wave 2 is... variants of Jenny and Bucky.
Okay.
So a phasing version of Jenny and a sort of almost a camo version of Bucky. And I believe then Deadeye also fits into Wave 2. So it's three figures, one new one. And then Wave 3 will be the Storm Toad Trooper and another yet-to-be-released figure.
Cool.
So look out for that from Boss Fight Studios. You can jump onto the website if you're interested in ordering any of those. I think they... retail for around the $35 mark, so Boss Fight being a smaller toy company. But the beautiful thing that they came on very retro packaging that can be resealed. So you can open it up and you can take the figures out and then you can reseal it.
Toy companies, listen to that and do more of that. Yes,
they've
please.
Done it well and they've done it. It's very in keeping with the original packaging of the original Hasbro stuff. So yeah, very excited about that. NECA, we've got some more news on what the Baby Turtles pack's going to look like. And there's a hand in there that's garnered a lot of attention and excitement.
I saw the pictures of the hand, and for those that don't know what I'm talking about, it's the scene in the original movie where Michelangelo spins the chain or the rope of the nunchucks on his fingers, basically showing off, going, yep, you know, keep practicing. And when I first saw the pictures, I was going, okay, it's going to be a station. And because it's a stationary thing and the rope is dead straight, and then I just went, it kind of looks a bit funny. And then I think in direct answer to that, NECA dropped a video where it's literally like a toy helicopter would. You flick the thing and it just spins perfectly. I'm like, yep. All right, I'm in.
I'm sold. Yeah. What's a bonus for the four turtles?
Yeah, so it's almost an accessory with, you get the four baby turtles, that you get a little packet of chips, I think. The kitchen scene with Mikey and Donnie. And the spinning hand as well. So,
There was some pricing. I think it was around
$55. $55, probably by the time you get into Australia, and with conversions and stuff, you're looking around the $100 mark.
Yeah, I think Sam Cripps was saying about a $120 he could get it for.
Yep.
Which, when you do the maths on it, $30, you know, they're 6-inch NECA figures.
Yeah, and when you consider that...
With 5 points of articulation, I think, or even more. So they definitely advertise the fact they have articulation.
Yeah, there's a pizza box as well that comes with it, which if you've got the other, the full set of the four turtles or the slices of pizza would go...
Very clever. I saw this. Big fan of the old Ghosts and Goblins game. There's a retro Arthur figure from that particular game. If everyone remembers Ghosts and Goblins, and I was looking at the figure and I'm like, you know, he came in the full armor and everything. And I'm like, oh, what they need to do is have him so it's got removable armor and he's got the sort of trousers, polka dot sort of underwear underneath. Sure enough, that's what they did. It's all removable. You can snap on some little leg pieces to make the sort of boxer length short underwear. He's got, I think, about three different alternate heads. The face plate on the helmet moves up and down. Looked really nice, and it sounded like this was going to be the first in almost like a classic retro video game series by SH Figuarts, I think, that's putting that out.
Yeah, so, they're doing more and more good stuff. Like, big fan.
I did want to call out to something. I don't know if we've talked much about it on the podcast previously, but this is the start of a new line by Funko. So this is Wave 1. What we're seeing are retro 5.5-inch, almost sort of Masters of the Universe or Remco Galaxy Warriors or in that style, that sort of 5.5-inch. Very stocky in the squatting position. So think He-Man, essentially. They're doing Mortal Kombat X figures. So they've given us five figures in that first wave. Raiden, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Liu Kang, and Katana. And when you look at the Katana, you go, look, something like a Teela figure or an Evil Lin has definitely given inspiration for that figure. Pixel Dan's got a video up, and he unveiled the three chase figures, which are a totally clear ice version of Sub-Zero, a Raiden that's powering up, so he's got some sort of clear parts on him that are like, you know, and some extra electricity pieces that sort of snap on, and the Scorpion, the flaming skull head. which is beautiful. But I guess the most exciting part of this is that this is called Funko's Savage World line now. So they're saying they're basically going to give other properties this 5.5-inch retro treatment. So think about what that could mean.
So very, very similar to what we saw in Zorn toy line.
I believe this is almost the next kind of version of Zorn. It is very much that. The cards are very accurate, like Zorn. Zorn had the more narrow, thinner Masters of the Universe style card, and that very iconic blister that really is form-fitting to the character, which was, you know... They haven't gone for the belly button, but they've gone for the indentation, just like the Masters blister. So it's very paying homage to Masters, in my opinion. They're saying other things like, you know, Remco's Galaxy Warriors, which is true, But really, so they don't get busted.
They don't want Mattel knocking on their door and saying, "Hey."
But what? Just to throw it out there, because if you think about Funko Pops, Funko Pops. You know, what was I looking at the other day? They had a Chevy Chase figure.
They have licenses for everything.
They've got everything right now. So if this is almost a, you know, Funko Pops. I'm sure that the companies are saying you can do Chevy Chase in Funko Pop style. You can have that license. So, but this might be another case where they've got a plethora of licenses to choose from. What are some of the ones that you'd like to see in that style?
I don't know if Street Fighter would.
I was thinking that's the natural one you think of.
Street Fighter is a bit more slimmer, but well, you know, prove me wrong, Funko. Like,
I think you're almost thinking fantasy. You almost need that almost fantasy element to make it make sense. I don't necessarily know if Street Fighter would work.
For me, the obvious one would be Conan the Barbarian.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah, I could see more like you've just little runs of, you know, they're doing, sticking with the video game theme. You get your Assassin's Creed or your Halo Master Chief or, you know, those sort of big iconic, a Lara Croft and all these sorts of things. I don't know. I guess it's because with Mortal Kombat being the first one, I find it hard to think of stuff outside of the video game stuff. I'd want to see how they do it.
Double Dragon.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
Double Dragon would be cool because that's the era as well of when those sorts of toys were on the
market. And just when you think of the wide, huge variety of licenses that Funko have got.
Golden Axe.
It could be literally anything. Like, Golden Axe. If you can imagine it, there's a pop of it. Like,
Yeah, Wizard of Oz, you could do something like that. Wizard of Oz,
wow. Cool.
All right, final topic we've got for news, unless anyone's got anything else. I just wanted to shout out for DC Multiverse by Mattel. Few new things have dropped. So the Clayface Build-A-Figure, I don't know if I'd seen that before, but that in-box images started to show up. Mm-hmm. So they've gone for a running packaging change now for Multiverse.
Yep.
So where we're used to seeing that red style, sort of almost box-like, we're going to a new blue color scheme. And I think... from the looks of it, that might start from the Clayface Collect and Connect figure wave.
It certainly looks like it.
Yeah. But some really cool stuff there. I saw a really nice Batgirl that I don't know if I'd seen before. Batwoman. That. And they're doing a lot of the Rebirth stuff. So there's a Collect and Connect Lex Luthor from Rebirth. I think we're finally going to see the Wonder Woman. And I believe it might have... trying to think what else we saw, but from Dark Knight Returns 3, the comic book by Frank Miller.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, some pretty exciting stuff happening in that space as well. Anything else anyone wanted to shout out?
No, that's a whole lot of news. Yeah. So.
It is.
All righty. Well, I think it's probably time to head into the movie review.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
May the Force be with you.
Wise man say, forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza.
As you can see. Yes, that talk of pizza has got me very hungry. I think we're getting actually pizza after this episode, aren't
we,
Frank?
Yes, we are.
Very excited by that. Hey, we're going to talk Justice League now. This is a really interesting film. I know I caught it with Darren on opening day. We went out to Salisbury Cinema. We were... in luxury there at that beautiful new complex in the recliner seats.
The electric recliners, feet up. Yeah.
Didn't you? And just tell us, you took the week off, is that right, Darren?
I did take the week off. not just for that, but also so I could go to Supernova.
That's dedication, man. I love it.
It just so happened that the release of Justice League coincided with Supernova. So, I took some annual leave.
Well, that was great. I took the day off and we went out. It was a fantastic day. We did a bit of hunting afterwards and... really great day to just sort of embrace the moment.
Absolutely.
Just to talk some numbers, because it's been getting a lot of press in terms of not only the reviews and sort of the work around Rotten Tomatoes and the scores and the embargo and all that. So we just talk numbers. $202 million to date at the US box office and $372 million foreign, which gives us a total, if my math is right, $574 million. So approaching the sort of $600 million worldwide. So this episode, you know, by the time it airs, we're probably a bit behind in when we'll release this, but it might be up there towards sort of the 600 mark. Just to touch on Rotten Tomato scores, it's still sitting at the 40% critic score. And funnily enough, 81% audience score. Mm. So again, showing that sort of polarizing or disconnect. So I'm just going to open it up to everyone because we've all seen it now.
Yes, yep. We have. Yes.
Just what did we think?
Are we allowed to talk spoilers? Given that by the time this airs, it's going
to
be...
Maybe leave it to the end, a quick synopsis.
Just a quick one, yep. And then we'll go into spoilers.
Yep. Right? Yep. Yeah. Look, I liked it, to be completely honest. Whereas when I walked out of BVS, I felt like I was having to try and find positives in it. I walked out of Justice League going, yeah, like I quite enjoyed that. Is it a perfect movie? No. It's got some flaws, as most movies do, but it was, it was a good time, to be completely honest. You know, that 40% Rotten Tomatoes thing, you just go, nah, it's nowhere near that bad. I thought it was it's probably what BVS should have been in terms of how you were able to introduce multiple characters and set things up for future spin-off movies and that sort of stuff. I think probably like a lot of superhero movies, it suffers from the villain, probably the main villain being a bit of an issue. It was great fun. I think considering what happened behind the scenes with the directorial change and stuff, there was a few that for me that sort of stood out where you went, well, that's a bit out of tone with the last hour of stuff I've just seen. But considering all that and stuff, I thought they did it quite well.
I personally loved it, which probably surprises no one. Absolutely adored it. I've actually seen it three times. And the only reason why I've only seen it three times is just been lack of time. I'd be there every day if I could.
Nice.
Absolutely adored it. I've been waiting for this for so long. You know, the chemistry between the heroes was absolute plus. I feel that every time you see Batman on the screen, you can link it back to a particular history in his a particular moment in his history. For me, this is the Bruce Timm Batman. You have a real sense of the Justice League tone, the Batman the Animated Series. Some of the scenes, I won't go into spoilers yet, some of the scenes really, really conveyed that to me. I really loved how it picked up from Batman versus Superman in a lot of ways, you know, some of the guilt and shame that, and sorry for those who haven't seen Batman versus Superman from spoiling it for you, but some of the guilt and shame that Bruce Wayne sort of felt, and that I feel they really progressed his character along really, really, really well. I loved Wonder Woman as per usual. Gal Gadot absolutely owns that role.
Yeah, brilliant.
And
she's incidentally the highest, got the highest amount of hints for her IMDb site.
I did read that today. Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
And I've certainly hit it up to learn more about Gal.
So have I, but I actually remember her from the Fast and Furious movies that she was in before that, as Giselle. I thought she was sensational. I thought Barry Allen in it was excellent, as you know, obviously the Flash, and Aquaman, and I thought there was a lot going for it. This is incidentally how I'd always envisioned the DC universe would expand. Even as a child, I didn't see the Marvel route as plausible as a child of introducing characters in solo films. I just thought, no studio is going to do that with characters that are not household names. They're going to try them in something else first and build a fan following.
Mm-hmm.
So I can sort of see the rationale there for doing that. I love the Parademons. I thought they were fantastic. For me, I didn't have the villain issue that a lot of people have, and I put that down to, for me, you know, it felt like a superpowers movie in a lot of ways as well, because mm-hmm. there were so many characters from that line, and I guess that was sort of what I'd sort of been looking for. Everyone knows I'm a huge Batman fan, but the superpowers line was my very first DC line as a kid. This was just, for me, this was pure gold. I do want to see more of it. I do hope we see a director's cut or an ultimate edition or some sort of special edition down the road. I want to also say that I think Joss Whedon's getting a lot of crap online that he shouldn't be getting for what he did. I think he did a marvellous job stepping in to what was someone else's film during the most dreadful of circumstances. Yeah. And to do that and to be able to complete it and get it to a point where it could be released you know, I think he deserves everyone's credit and gratitude rather than the criticism that he's getting. That's just my perspective. Sure. But I feel the same way about Zach. I don't think, you know, people on the opposite side should be tearing into him up.
Yeah, I thought it was a good movie, but given the hype and six characters from the Justice League, I'm pretty sure I sort of led to this in the earlier podcast. You go into it with a higher level of expectation because it's got everyone in it, and I don't think it hit that, you know, that 90% mark that you sort of go in with the headstrong, like, this is not going to be a good movie. This is going to be a fantastic movie. And it just didn't hit that my expectation of being fantastic. I'll never say it was a bad movie. I definitely think it was a very good movie, but I definitely sort of said in previous podcasts that that expectation from a lot of people is that it needs to be fantastic, and it didn't quite hit that benchmark, I don't think, for a lot of fans, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
We talked about CGI. You know, that was one of the downfalls of it.
For sure.
On the flip side, a positive note from me, I love the fact that we saw a lot more Batman. I felt in BVS it was more a Superman-orientated film, and we only got that one shot of him in the abandoned house of fighting that criminal, towards the start. That was his sort of only time he did anything Shine. By himself. And I felt this movie had a lot more Batman by himself moments, and gave the character a lot more spotlight than what we'd seen in this previous universe, so to speak. So I did like that a lot. So
I think I think I agree with you, Ben. It's a good film without being great. It's got a lot of flaws, it's got a lot of issues. But when it does things well, it does them really well. And that opening scene with Batman jumping around the water tower is the most Batman the Animated Series thing I've seen on screen.
Definitely.
And I hear that was a Whedon
was it?
Inclusion. So it was just surprised me. But
it was just that moment. Sorry to cut you off. But like the bit where, you know, the criminal just sort of moves and you see Batman in the far background just sort of hunched over and you're like, this is awesome. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
No, very cool. And yeah, like Darren said, I think some of the moments where the team gets together and has that chemistry, I think, work really well. There's a moment, I know we talk a lot about the humor and bringing that humor into the film. Marvel's done it very well. I think they had the right balance for a DC film. They brought a bit more of that in. But for me, there was really only one super laugh out loud moment, which was very well. I won't say to what it is, but I was basically, you know, in hysterics for that moment. But then I thought back to, say, something like Thor Ragnarok, where I was laughing a lot more throughout it. Now, I don't need that. That's not a big part of why I go to see that film. It's not about the comedy or the comedic elements, but it probably just didn't hit that high mark that maybe a lot of people were looking to. It felt to me very unfinished, that the studio put a lot of pressure on Joss to, you know, I would have preferred that they say, let's change the release date and spend a bit more time, you know, tidying up the Henry Cavill moustache and things like that. The Steppenwolf, I just didn't like the CGI on Steppenwolf.
Yep.
And a lot of the close-ups, I sort of was sitting there going, oh, like, just, it took me out of the moment because it was so bad.
Just on that, I couldn't take the villain seriously because I didn't want to look at him. Yeah. And I apologize for, you know, Darren, but
don't need to apologize.
Darren said a very good thing, because he said it's like superpowers. You know, it's like a cartoon. Yeah. You know, like, if you think of it like that, it's fine.
He's been called the video game villain in terms of his look compared to the rest of the world, which was, you know, really looked great, and how Batman and all the other characters looked and moved. He just felt out of place.
It was like I was watching Spawn. You know, I know that sounds
terrible. Oh, the 90s movie.
Yeah, where you sort of come by and you go, what are you watching there? What game are you playing? You know, what video game are you playing? I'm watching a movie. Yes, that was really disappointing. Like, and I think that is because they were under pressure, and I think Joss has done a great job with what he had.
Yep.
But they should have made a call to say, look, this just looks, for this kind of film, you know, now I think there's a lot of calls for director's cuts or whatever you want to call it, ultimate cuts. But yeah, how much is Warner going to now spend on fixing this sort of stuff up? It's too late. You know, they're not going to fix up the moustache now, right? Nah, that's done and dusted. That's right. Moved. They're the clips we're going to see.
It's pretty impossible. Richard Donner was given a budget to basically redo Superman 2 in the lead up to Superman Returns back in 2006.
Do you think we'll see the Cavill moustache fixed up in a cut?
It's not impossible. Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen next year.
I don't think it's impossible. I think, and this is going to sound like I'm bashing people, I'm a long way from this situation. I don't know. All I know is what I've read, and I don't know how much truth there is. I don't think it's going to happen under the current management of Warner Brothers. That's just my sense.
That's fair.
But if what we've read is true, but I'm a long way away from that, so I could be wrong. Mm. But there was. Myself and a really good friend of mine, the late Steve Young, we signed a petition years and years ago, online petition, for the Richard Donner Superman 2 cut. There was a big movement for that.
Mm, yeah.
And that was released to coincide with on DVD and I think Blu-ray, or it's come out on Blu-ray since. But it was released in conjunction with the lead-up to the theatrical release of Superman Returns.
Yeah. That's
So I don't see that it's unreasonable to think that down the track, Justice League couldn't warrant something. I don't think it's going to happen right now, but there could be an ultimate cut, or more of the film that is complete, that does exist, that is ready to go.
Apparently there's no Snyder cut, but
apparently there is a longer Joss Whedon cut.
I'd love to see that. He was told to strip it down to two hours.
I think a ultimate cut, or whatever you want to call it, cuts need to enhance the movie. It's not going to fix the movie. A classic I like to use for showing what before and after edit director's cut. You take Aliens. Yep. So you watch the film, the theatrical release of Aliens, and that's a freaking good movie. That is one of my favorite movies. Mm. And then you watch the director's cut, which is about 20 minutes extra, and they're spliced Sigourney Weaver being in hyperspace for 50 years, and she's contemplating the fact that her daughter is now 50 years old, and the fact that the submachine guns are shooting in the alleyway and things, and that's why the aliens come on the roof. Like, that just blew my mind, and that's the only cut I will ever watch of that film these days. But if I'd never seen that, I still would love Aliens, because the original is still such a fantastic movie. It enhances the overall thing. I don't think a editor's cut of Justice League is going to fix all those problems that we have, especially the CGI and things.
Maybe not the CGI. Story may flow a lot better.
We saw that with BVS, because
it wasn't just about what they put in. They reorganised the scenes for the theatrical cut of Batman versus Superman, because they took so much out. Mm. They had to then reorganise the order for it to sort of make some sort of story sense.
Yeah.
But seeing it in the proper order that it was intended made a far more cohesive story.
I think you're going to struggle, mainly because you've got characters like Steppenwolf, who is all CG, and Cyborg. Like, they probably did film a whole lot more scenes, but because of the directorial change, the budget, from what I understood, blew out. And then what, you're going to pay the CG monkeys more money to sit there for scenes to go onto? I think 10 years from now, when it's like Justice League's Batman's 100th birthday or whatever it is, maybe. Yep. In the same way, there was a huge gap of time between the Superman 2 cut you were talking about. I don't think we're not going to see like a Suicide Squad where a year later or less than there's another cut. And when you look at that one in particular, it was all just extra scenes because they were doing practical effects with the characters, despite even as outlandish as they were. So short answer, not anytime soon.
And I just round out mine, but maybe, and then I would like to touch on some spoilers. Some really moving scenes I found. I know there's some terrible dialogue thrown in there, but some really moving scenes where you've got Amy Adams as Lois Lane and Martha. The fact that,
are we calling it spoilers?
Let's call it spoilers now, because I just realized what I'm going to say. But when Superman does return, that's some really powerful moments, because you have that culmination and that history on film leading up to that point. And I found myself quite emotional in some of those parts, which was nice to connect to the film in that way. I've got to throw something out there which bothered me, and I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and reviews on this. So Breaking the Panel, great analysis guys on that. DC on Screen as well. I've been listening to a number of their podcasts. But something that no one has touched on, which really bothered me, was you've got that opening scene, which is brilliant. But the logic for Batman capturing the criminal is not to apprehend the criminal. It's basically to then throw him over a ledge or sort of hold him over the precipice for him to exhibit fear.
Yes.
And then bait for parroting. Brilliant. Yep. Loved it. Great. You get to the end sequence and you've got an entire town cowering in their houses with parademons swarming around. Yet they don't come and sort of attack them like they did at the start.
The family that's sort of trapped in the house.
They're in a house and they're surrounded by parodies.
My wife pointed this out. She goes, that thing of having, you know, you're not told who these characters are. You don't even know their names. They're the innocent bystanders in all of this. That just smacks Joss Whedon. What he does is, because, you know, it's all well and good to see Batman and Superman in the league taking on and bashing up bad guys. It's another thing to see it from the ground view. What are the stakes? You're putting innocent people's lives at risk, and that whole shtick of what he does. You think Avengers and that he's done the same sort of thing. You see the nameless waitress who's like, oh my god, and she's just watching it all from a shop window type thing, like that sort of thing.
It's grounding it so the audience can feel for
bit
the
of perspective.
I get that, but the plot then to me just doesn't work because if you're in a city like Gotham. You got a parademon, you know, not parademons everywhere, right? There's just a parademon here and scout parademons, right? And you hang a guy off an edge of a building and that draws out a parademon. You've got an entire city locked down, swarmed by parademons, and they're not
breaking into feed on that.
I couldn't get it.
I can get it. I think that was the studio.
I get it from
reacting to people's responses to Man of Steel.
In terms of the film itself, making logical sense. I know why they did it.
People still felt uncomfortable about that in Man of Steel.
The mass destruction.
I thought that was an important part of Man of Steel, but this.
I do too.
By the by.
And I feel like they've watered that down ever since. You know, like the whole Doomsday battle in BVS. You know, how many times did they say it's an abandoned part of Gotham? Yeah, this is an abandoned part. No one is going to get hurt in this fight. Yeah, and this whole take it out to this abandoned, nuclear meltdown Chernobyl, essentially, in Russia. Again, screamed of that. It's like, oh, how convenient, you know.
See, this is the danger. There's a lot of positives, but this is the danger to the internet, where you can get an instant reaction to what people thought of a film the moment they see it, basically, and a studio can then
knee-jerk reaction to it. Yeah,
what they're doing based on everything. I feel that's what's happened to Superman. People said, "Oh, you've got Superman wrong. This, that, and the other," and I respect people's opinion on that. But I always think there was a hero's journey taking place over the course of three films. And people expected that hero's journey to take place over the course of one film. They wanted the Superman they knew by the end of Man of Steel. And that was that. They didn't want that sort of to unfold and for him to become a traditional Superman over the course of three. They just didn't feel comfortable with that. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying that's where they were at. And they judged an entire trilogy perhaps on the first installment.
I do think it took them two and a half movies and a resurrection to get Superman right. You're exactly right. And, you know, shout out to our good friend Chris Wisdom, one of the biggest Superman fans we've ever met, and he was like, yes, this is my Superman. He was very disappointed in how he was portrayed in the earlier films and Man of Steel and these, and I was more happy for Chris than anything else, because I saw it, and I, as a not a really schooled Superman fan, I just went, yes, that's a nice, positive Superman. The race scene at the end, we're in spoilers. So good. I'm just like, that's Silver Age genius. That was amazing.
Yeah, it was. And it played tribute to the pop culture joke, Simpsons and other things. Who would win?
That
was gold.
And any spoilers, Frank, or...?
Probably the one that the very, very post-credit scene. Did we all see that? Yeah.
Yes.
Now, I unfortunately, like literally 3 days before the movie, flicking through Facebook, as you do, and one of those like DC on universe, not DC on screen, but DC Universe Rocks My World pages or something like that. And they said, oh, Deathstroke appears at the end. And they just had it in a time. And the comments were just, people were filthy. Angry. And I just went, look, people, vote with your clicks. Unfollow the page, you know. And so that unfortunately was ruined for me, but it was such a huge moment. Now, Joe Manganiello,
yes,
I think.
Manganiello, that's the one.
Yeah, he's been cited ever since then, getting around with a t-shirt that says Legion of Doom. And so now all the talk is, oi, this is coming up. Sick. And
Yeah.
So now, I'm keen for a villain-centric movie because this, you know, Marvel haven't done anything like that. Suicide Squad was kind of the same thing, but a Legion
Suicide
of Doom.
Suicide Squad was, but most of those villains were played in a sympathetic manner.
Yeah, I think they could go
Legion of Doom. You wouldn't.
Yeah, I think now that you know the hero film has been done, you've got Venom, of course, is filming with Tom Hardy at the moment. Yeah. I think studios and villain films are going to be the next big, you know, thing we see. Mm-hmm. So cool.
That post-credit scene was my favourite post-credit scene of any film that I've seen.
Okay.
I loved it because it was shot beautifully.
Yes, it was,
you know, and it had an arc to it. You know, it started off in prison and there's, you know, the move to basically get Lex Luthor out, which I thought was brilliant, and then it sort of culminates in that very nice spectacle of the ship.
Yep,
and coming onto the boat. Sort of coming onto the boat.
Deathstroke's costume looks amazing.
Oh, it does so good.
That whole
scene is just brilliant. The other thing I'd like to say about the film, for me as a huge Batman fan, I thought they nailed beautifully. They played up the character. They played up the contrast between his humanity, both as someone who makes mistakes, but also someone that is very human and very mortal. Amongst a bunch of immortals, gods,
like the scene where he's like, you see him bruised on his back and stuff.
Exactly.
I love
this
that.
This is a guy that's totally vulnerable, totally accessible.
He's just a guy.
Yeah, he is. Mm. And Diana says to him, "You can't do this forever." And he says, "I can barely do it now."
Yeah.
And you think, this is exactly. This isn't taking on the Joker or the Riddler, or this is something totally different. And you know, they haven't just gone with. Because I'm Batman, you know. They've actually
grounded him.
Grounded him.
He's out of his league.
Very, very nicely played, Trent. But I just thought that was brilliant. I also thought it was so relatable because who doesn't relate to the idea of I'm getting older or I'm getting this or I can't do what I used to? I just thought that was terrific.
We haven't talked much about Aquaman, but. Jason Momoa.
There you go.
We're in.
who I met, by the way, and I was commenting.
Yeah, well, that, and the benefit of the cons. And he's a really nice guy.
He signed my Aquaman DC Multiverse figure, but anyway, I digress.
Nice.
But I thought that to take a character that's been, you know, I guess a bit of a laughing stock for the DC Universe, and I think do what they've done with him was brilliant. I thought, in terms of the new characters they introduced, he was my favourite. I know a lot of people. Like Flash, and a lot of people relate to Cyborg and think they did that well. So I think there was merits to all of them. But I just think they did something really cool and they made a character that is sort of maligned now an interesting character. The one thing, sorry Frank, to cut off, the one thing that bothered me, and it makes me wonder, I know that this is talk of the bubble, the speak bubble.
Yes.
I didn't necessarily like that whole Atlanta scene, the way it was shot.
In the murky water,
and then I don't know. Maybe it was just around the whole that mother box gets taken, and it's sort of like.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but James Wan, the director of Aquaman, has already said, there's no bubble in the Aquaman film.
Yep.
That's something that was in Justice League for whatever reason that was a creative decision taken.
But there's
it's not going to be in the Aquaman film coming out in 2018. I know that Trent and others have felt, and I don't disagree, that we didn't see quite enough of Atlanta. But I feel like, I do think we saw enough to think this is damn exciting. I can't wait for to see it in a year's time.
There's enough for a spin-off in there, and there's enough material, you know, and I didn't see it three times. I might be wrong on the dialogue, but that the insinuation is that Aquaman hasn't been to Atlantis for years and stuff.
Yeah, he's a bit of an outsider.
Yeah,
and
that intrigued me more because I was a little worried leading in with all the promos that they were just going to make Aquaman, you know, the fish bro, you know, he's your quarterback, he's party time, whatever. And I think that scene alone gave him enough depth to go, all right, I'm interested to see the Aquaman movie. So I think they did it really well.
Yeah. In a segue for Aquaman, I just want to highlight the fact, and I left this purposely for the spoilers, is the promo that was released about a year ago, Unite the Seven.
Yes.
So I went into that movie expecting to see a seventh character unreleased. And and we did actually see Green Lantern.
Yes.
We did get a tease of Green Lantern, which was freaking awesome.
Yeah.
But I was sitting there expecting to see a seventh Justice League character. And at the end when we saw Deathstroke and stuff, I thought that was cool. We could, booyah.
Where's my number
Where's number seven? Where's, you know? And that really annoyed me. And I went into the, Googled it, and, you know, going back a year ago, people would say, who is the seventh character?
Correct. Yeah.
And apparently DC completely dropped thing because, and I think someone said, like, it's the seven seas and things like that. But, you know, when you release something like that, you're opening it for interpretation.
Yeah.
And I might have interpreted it wrong, but there were a lot of other people on online who interpreted exactly the same way as I did.
If you're going to say something like that, you need to make sure that either you can meet expectations or there's only one way to interpret it.
Yeah.
Because you do not want to leave things disappointed. Just on a side note, I think the thing that's disappointed me the most about this film is how Warner Brothers have marketed it. And I think
without
that's what,
Superman.
Yeah, without Superman.
Yeah,
and I think
good
that's
call.
Cost it.
Correct.
Particularly in the US, where he is the American Boy Scout and he's such a big part of the American culture, to not market it without him, I think, was a colossal mistake. I know a lot of people like Trent thought it was really cool and it was paying fan service, and I think it was. But I think you don't include him in the first trailer. Sure, maybe the second trailer there's an argument to include him, but you make sure, damn sure, if you're not including him in the second, he's in the third. Because
even they hadn't finished the mustache work yet.
Even a silhouette or something, or even a S symbol, fading out or something. Yeah. Just some hint that he's going to be in there, but he's not, you know, front and center in the six. Yeah. You know, and
what was that poster where he took up the negative space around the characters? And
I think that was a fan art.
Was that fan art?
Yeah. But that's exactly how you would do that sort of stuff. Yeah. I understand why they did it from he's dead. You know, you can't just have him plastered on, you know, people's sippy cups as they go into the movie. Like, I get
that.
Well,
it was on mine, actually.
But was it the BVS photo shot?
Yeah, probably.
But like, you're exactly right, Darren. Don't include him in the first trailer. And I think he did show up eventually in the third trailer, but it was left deliberately ambiguous that it could have been a flashback, it could have been a dream sequence, all that sort of stuff. And then what happened is it's almost like they realized a bit too late, because the movie had been out for a week, 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden he's on all the posters, he's on everything, and you go, you really missed a trick there.
The writing was on the wall, I think, there was a child at San Diego Comic Con. I don't know if everyone saw this, but I watched the Justice League panel. There was a child that asked at the panel, what kind of role does Superman play in this film? And Jason Momoa, and I'm not having a shot at him, I think he's a great guy, he said, didn't your parents show you the last movie? Superman's dead. And he looks like he's going to cry at San Diego. I swear.
He's dead!
And Gal Gadot basically interrupts and says, look, we can't tell you much, but it's safe to say that if you're a Superman fan, you're going to enjoy this film.
Yeah.
I think, you know, what Jason Momoa was doing was towing the studio line. They weren't allowed to answer that question.
Yeah.
And but Henry Cavill being shooting Mission Impossible 6 at the time, meant he was the only one of the six not at the panel well. So wasn't a good overarching look.
But I think when you factor in that last bit of that, the last bit of BVS, everybody knew that he was coming back. Like,
there's a
It's a Justice League movie. You can't have a Justice League film.
I don't know that every parent that takes their child to see a movie like this knows DC Universe as well as we do to say that he's going to be in it. I think the only clue in the marketing was that you had the five on the poster saying you can't save the world alone.
With the S,
indicating perhaps there's those five can't save it without someone else.
Yep. Yep.
It was
Unite the Seven.
yeah, that's right. And they should have. But I think that really badly hurt it. And I think what we're seeing is a disconnect
between the US box office and the international box office, where it's done well outside the US, based on the fact that Superman's not embedded in those other nations' cultures as much as he's in the American psyche.
Yeah.
And that was a colossal mistake to do that, in my view, to let go that far. People needed to know before the film opened that he was going to be in it.
Correct.
And our parents needed to know if they were taking their children that he was going to be in it.
It's much like the debate around Thor Ragnarok and Hulk being in it. I mean, I think there was a debate on Breaking the Panel about, could you imagine basically going into that movie not knowing that and the moment and how great that would have been? And yes, that would have been great as a viewer. But
you've got to sell tickets.
The damage it would have done to ticket sales, right? You've got to
get bums on seats. Yeah,
so... So I appreciated what they did as a viewer with Superman, but not as a fan that wants this film to make as much as it can.
Yeah.
And I would have much rather had, like you said, the promotional material to match and have better box office takings.
Absolutely. It was fan service, and that's great, but the ultimate fan service is make sure the movie makes enough money so that we can see more of these characters. That's the ultimate fan service.
Correct.
You know, just my 2 cents.
Very good.
If it's worth 2 cents.
All right, there you go. Well, that's our review of Justice League, and I guess all the surrounding controversies and issues. The moustache one for me, that moustache better look fantastic in Mission Impossible 6.
Can you imagine if there's a scene in Mission Impossible where he shaves it off? Like, oh.
Slowly for like, you know, just... I wonder how much this moustache cost you, Warner.
Very good.
On that, we'll probably wrap this episode of Toy Power. Great having your company today. And leave a comment, and we'll see you around the toy aisles.
Yeah, what did you think of Justice League? Let us hear your thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, one and all. Until next time, good journey.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but good. Yeah.